There was a recent panel about advice for merging talent in HPC, and I found that there was good advice toward the end, specifically about work ethic and some opportunities like going to community colleges. But I wanted to add my perspective to this larger conversation because I feel like it was missing. And my perspective isn't just from my life experience, it's from talking to a lot of people that are early career or later career and sort of working in this space. And so the panel started and there was kind of this larger message of like, where is the HPC talent? Like looking around, you know, we need them and where are they? And there was this consensus that like, there's a mystery about where they are. And I guess I don't see that same mystery. So I want to offer a different perspective because I found during this panel, there were several elephants in the room. And to be fair, it's very hard sometimes to point out elephants in the room. You have to be brave or maybe you just aren't aware of them. So to kind of step back, the first question that I would ask is when you look around, and I mean both the panel and across the talent space, who exactly are you seeing? Well, I think that we're seeing people that, one, knew that high performance computing was an option for them, and two, they found a path where they were enabled to enter the space. And so maybe that means they had academic parents. I've seen a lot of folks like this where from a very early age, like they knew they loved science or they wanted to do something with computers and it was just very natural. Or maybe they studied computer science in college and they knew that was a path for them. They knew it was a path they could take and they knew they maybe didn't have the perfect idea of what would come at the end, but they had a general sense of it that it was an established path and they kind of just could fall into it and follow it to some respect. And so if you're looking for those specific people, well, those are the people that you find. You see them in the panel, you see them in tech companies, you see them around you in your employer if you're in some kind of academic computational science. And, you know, a lot of these people, like, they don't often stay in academia or HPC. They are talented and they go off and they get hired. They get a higher salary off at some tech company. And that's something that we know very well, too. So, for example, like at National Labs, we tend to be recruiting places for these tech companies. That's just kind of a known thing. Anyway, that is a side point. So I want to flip the question now and ask, who don't we see? Or more generally, like, where are these missing emerging talents in HPC? We don't see people that don't know that it wasn't an option for them to begin with. And we also don't see people that fell off along the way. So for example, someone from a marginalized group, that's the first person in the family to go to college. Do you think they know about the nuances of what to study, our graduate programs, or a niche area like high-performance computing? The people that I've talked to, and namely I want to call out our recent Developer Stories podcast episode where I talked to Jay Lofsted, Jay has worked very closely with these students, and his observation is that they don't know. No one has told them. They haven't come from the right background to know that there's an established path. And maybe they've had other socioeconomic or medical adversity, and they go through that same college experience, and they're not like, oh, what am I going to be for my career? Look at this selection of college, and isn't life great? They're in, like, survival mode. They're working. They're just taking the minimum classes to get by because they really just want the degree as like a passing thing. And they don't have the luxury to think about their career until this very last minute when they graduate and they have to get a job. And they're like, okay, I need to make those monies now. Let me enter the job market. And oh my God, I haven't even started thinking about this. And so a lot of folks in the panel said something along the lines about, like, you know, knowing where they wanted to go or just even kind of abstractly and then doing whatever it took to get there. And I think that is great. That is admirable when you see something and you want it and you work hard. But it's missed the point that some people don't know that it's even an option for them or that it even exists. It's strange to hear a lot of talk about, you know, people when they're in university saying like, oh yeah, I studied all these languages. So like some people in the panel that were a little bit older talked about Fortran a little bit later. They talked about C++. And there's almost this like assumption that knowing to study STEM, knowing to study computer science or programming language is a known and a possible thing. For any student, I really don't believe that it is. From my experience, I did have enough awareness to enter college to see that there was something called computer science to try it out my first year, but I found it, the experience, strange because first it was predominantly one demographic. I also found that I was entering with other students that seemed to already know how to do this, and they were just kind of push-pawing all of it. And I found myself in this class, you know, doing an exam on paper. I probably with like four loops, and I'm pretty sure it was, I don't even remember what language it is. And I didn't get it. I didn't get why I wanted to do it, why I wanted to be there. I didn't see myself fitting in. I looked at the professors of the class. They were also all one demographic. And I didn't pursue it beyond that. Like, I just, it is so something to say, to be able to see yourself in a particular field or studying something. And if you don't get it, if someone doesn't meet you where you're at in terms of, you know, justifying like or explaining to you why it's interesting, then it's really hard as a young person when you're very naive to kind of stick with it and know that you should stick with it. Because the other thing is that you might have people that are older than you, your parents or, you know, mentors, whatever, that are telling you this is a good career. It doesn't make sense now, but that's okay. You should stick with it. And so for me, to go back to my story, I didn't have my first real learning experience with programming until after college, when I kind of like, I dove into a job and it was something I had to do. This was a long time ago, but it sticks out to me because it makes it really clear that learning isn't always about just like, oh, I'm doing an internship or having a college course. Like, a lot of us wind up learning almost accidentally, and not because we have to, because we're driven to, and we wind up doing it on our own. And so, okay, to go back to this panel, there was someone that said, you know, something about being in the right place at the right time. And I think that's spot on. I'll also add that you kind of have to be the right demographic of person at the right place at the right time, because if you're not, you either will get kind of marginalized, or worse, you'll just be totally ignored. You know, that is a thing too. The point about having different needs for research is also really good, specifically project management and maybe even different kinds of engineers. But I will add that we also suffer in academia still from this hierarchy that something like HPC, the resources and the people, comes as a service to scientists. It implicates almost a second tier in terms of value. And that gets reflected in how people are treated. It gets reflected in salaries and just, you know, in career progression. It's why, to go back to kind of the research software engineering movement, it's why for so many years, people that worked in software did it very quietly. So to go back to college experiences, since this is what this panel was about, where are these people? Well, we are never going to see these people that are in marginalized groups that don't know about the past because they don't know that it's an option for them. Does that mean the talent doesn't exist? No, that's kind of what we're concluding, but it actually means that the pool that we see is going to reflect this select group of individuals that didn't fall off along the way. The hard point that a lot of people don't want to acknowledge, or maybe they acknowledge it and they don't say it, is that the same path, and I'm making air quotes, but you can't see me. I just realized that's not the same path is much harder for someone that doesn't match this predominant demographic. And I think the conversation about all the different things that you have to learn to be someone in HPC, or how varied the roles are that themselves, that's a very different conversation. You really can't say there's one mold that someone can just kind of like sign up for. We need lots of different people, but again, that's a different conversation. And I want to give you an example of just these subtle nuances of what happens between different kinds of people. So at an employer, I won't name the employer, I saw a new young career person join, very bright, very talented, out of college. It was a he, and he happened to match the dominant demographic of the place, which wasn't surprising. He joined this project working with a woman who really did not match this predominant demographic. And so what I saw, and actually the story was told to me by both of them, which is why it's a sort of a good story, because I was able to get both perspectives. They needed some hardware to do their work. I don't remember what the hardware was. And so the woman had been asking for over a year, and she either was ignored or not granted the request. But this new employee, I watched as very quickly, you know, he was kind of taken under at least three wings of higher level folks at this employer. And, you know, not surprisingly, all of them matched his demographic. Now, My best guess here with respect to that is that, like, if you see someone that reminds you of your younger self that you can really can kind of have good vibes with or jive with or understand better, you can put yourself in their shoes, it's much easier to take them under their wing because you're like, oh, yes, this is younger little me. Of course, I'm going to mentor them and support them and that kind of thing. And you invest in them and you give them what they need and you listen to them and you talk to them and you go to lunch with them. And as a result of that, these people get more opportunities, better opportunities. They're the ones that are promoted. And so what happened in this particular case is that I think he just went to lunch with one of his mentors and he asked for the hardware. And guess what? He got it almost immediately. And this story, so this young person actually came to me and told me this story. And he said, my gosh, Vanessa, like, this does not seem fair. And that reflected huge maturity on his part. But I'll also point out that a lot of these subtle interactions and the fact that, you know, someone is treated differently than someone else, someone has opportunities that someone else does not get, these things go under awareness for all parties involved. And then people come back and they ask questions like, where are all the talent? To go back to that question, if someone is lucky enough to find the path into computational work and they are resilient enough to stick with it, even though doing the same thing would be 10 times harder for them, that's when you'd actually see these talented folks. But because this is really hard, people tend to fall off along the way. And this is why when we look across leadership in tech, we see predominantly one demographic. It's why when you go to, if you are someone in tech, depending on where you are, it's why you can go to your meetings and see predominantly one gender. It's why you can go to specific technical community meetings and see predominantly one demographic. When you don't see that diversity, it's usually an indication that people fell off along the way and there's these kind of inequalities that are unspoken that no one can speak about because they're politically incorrect and we can't talk about those things. Another factor may be that just people don't have the perspective to say it. So if you've been someone that always has been taken under a wing, or you're not a member of a marginalized group, you can't really reflect on this perspective because you've never had an experience where you felt like you don't belong, or you felt smaller than the other people, or you felt like you couldn't get your voice in. And it's interesting because what it manifests in is a panel like I just watched, where you have predominantly one demographic and they're asking a question like, where's the talent? So I want to throw the question back at the community and kind of spin it a bit. I think that the talent is out there. The path to advancing and making it to a point where people can be aware that you're there is not easy or fair. So what can we do to help? So I don't want to repeat a recent conversation, actually the recent conversation that I had with Jay. There's a lot there. There's a lot of really good advice. I recommend that you listen to that podcast. My advice for questions like this is often not to try to answer the question, but to look in the absence, in the empty space, because sometimes for this case, the people that are missing is a more telling message than those that are present. And the advice that I'll give is twofold. To people that are later in their career, I want to forward some advice that I've forwarded before from Roland Mosbergen in Australia. It is to look out for folks in marginalized groups and to help to elevate them. So if you've given a talk on containers 10,000 times, find someone who hasn't had the opportunity to do it once and suggest that they give the talk because their journey to get to the same place maybe has been harder. The second piece of advice is a bit of an antithesis to what folks in this panel said. Instead of trying to focus on a specific study like computer science or HPC, choose an early job that's going to give you exposure to many different things. Try being an MRI tech or someone that runs behavioral studies or designs experiments. Heck, try working in an ice cream shop or decorating cakes. And yes, I'm reflecting on my own experience, but I learned so much about myself and about the things that made me happy by really throwing myself not into a specific role early on, but by trying out many different things. And that is possibly the one thing I did right when I was younger. Not because someone told me, but because I really just kind of stumbled into it. And it felt like a good idea at the time. Another really interesting point here is about voice. So depending on who you are, it can be a lot harder to get your voice heard, you know, at the table is what they always say. And it's especially challenging if you're a more introverted or quiet person or someone that maybe is from a marginalized group and people aren't going to have, you know, just baseline as much respect for just by looking at you. You have to start to put yourself in uncomfortable situations. And this happened to me to such a huge degree. I entered graduate school and I was so quiet and I was very nervous about, you know, standing up and giving a presentation. I'd go into a colloquium at lunch and I'd sit on the side and I'd watch my peers who were the same age as me, the same part in their career. They would sit at the table and they would speak up. They would either give an opinion or ask questions. And I was floored. Like I wasn't sure that I could do it. But what happened was I saw a professor, it was Russ Altman, teaching a course. And he just came in there and he had his papers and his markers and he was throwing them. And I looked at that and I was like, oh my God, he's having so much fun. And then there was another graduate student that was about a year above me named Francisco. And I remember in one of our, I think it was like a study session, but he was explaining a support vector machine to someone on the whiteboard, just so casually, so confidently. You know, he wasn't explaining it perfectly, but the ease into which he did it really gave me pause. And I was like, my God, I want to do that too. And so even if you're someone that isn't naturally outspoken, I can tell you from personal experience that it's something that you can learn. And I really pushed myself into this place of discomfort where for a long time, I forced myself to raise my hand. I forced myself to say something. And what happens over time is you start to become the person that you want to be. And it's really strange because now I'm really comfortable speaking. I like speaking. I think I give good talks, you know, hopefully I'm allowed to say that. And it would be really surprising to go back and to kind of tell this to my younger self because I certainly couldn't have anticipated it. But even with that confidence, there are going to be challenges even later in your career based on who you are. So even kind of, you know, mid-career, when, you know, I wasn't a super expert on anything, but I was pretty good at a few kinds of technologies and I had done some good talks and I had done some interesting work. I still would show up to, for example, a new collaboration and have to work twice as hard as everyone else just to get a baseline level of respect. And I mean, like when I would first enter, I would just be kind of ignored. So like, let's say that there was discussion about a plan or something, I would say something and people would kind of keep talking over me. Or at worst, people would say things to me like, oh, this must be so confusing for you. You know, and little, I guess I would call those microaggressions. And sometimes you would come away or I would come away from a meeting and I'd feel really crappy about myself. And I'd have to kind of step back, look at what happened in the meeting, unwrap it and be like, you know, what the person said was really mean. Like, I would not say that to someone. Like, oh my God. So what happens even when you work hard, you get through this gauntlet where you have to work harder than everyone else to get to the same spot, you still continue to face these challenges. And it's getting slightly easier as I get older and I have more expertise, I have, you know, a larger network, and I've proven myself to more people, but it's still a thing. And that's also something to say for, at least for the opportunity space, as I talked about earlier, because based on who you are, you will either get or not get opportunities. A lot of the opportunities that I've gotten have been because I've been loud. I speak my mind. I write about it. I'm very kind of public in the things that I do in terms of showcasing them, because that is a strategy that I've found is effective to having my voice heard. And it really sounds simple and stupid when you say it, but if you don't speak up loud enough, where loud enough is relative to who you are, you will not be heard. So whoever you are and whatever level of voice that you have, make sure that you speak loud enough. And when you are heard, make sure that you use your voice to speak for others that are not. I'll finish by saying that if you feel out of place, whether it's from subtle interactions, not being like everyone else in the room, or I guess the worst is more explicitly being told that something about you is wrong, remember that there is a place for you. You don't need anyone's permission to pursue what you want to do toward what you want to be as your authentic self.